the director of youth ministry here in LaGrange. Usually when I'm in this room, I'm talking to like 80 kids and their parents, and now I'm talking to my boss and all of our church leaders and all of the other leaders of the church. So it's a little different, but I'm very excited to get to be here with you all this morning. I have been here for 10 years. I'm just starting my 11th fall, which is exciting and unbelievable. And I also received my Master of Divinity from Garrett Evangelical in 2013. So what a ride it's been. But 10 years ago, almost exactly, I was sitting like in this room, I think, at 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning while 15 middle schoolers ran around wildly because that's what they do. So who here has gotten the privilege of being a part of a youth lock-in? Excellent. Well, I'm going to catch a few of you up if you haven't. I'll give you kind of a general schedule. But this lock-in for middle schoolers was planned by the volunteers that had been running youth ministry in the six-month interim between when the past youth minister resigned and when I got to start in September. And so they planned this bacon lock-in. And so here I was, 3 weeks into my brand new job, trying to remind myself that I was excited about this job, and that this was an awesome youth event that was going to set an exciting tone for rebuilding youth ministry at this church. Sure, it had been really hard to find any adults willing to stay overnight, even the ones who planned the event, and hard to negotiate around the schedules of kids who were so busy that they couldn't just come to the church at 7 p.m. on a Saturday and stay through worship the next Sunday morning. They had to come late from sports and leave early the next morning and figure out all these other events that were happening. But that all aside, it was going to be a great event. The youth were pumped, and there was this awesome idea of baking a lot of cookies to sell at a bake sale after worship the next morning. We weren't sure what we were going to do with the money that we raised, but it was going to go to some local nonprofit, they assured me. So, for those of you who haven't experienced a lock-in, this is somewhat, I think, what the schedule was like. I actually pulled up the document. So 7 p.m. was our welcome and our overview and some mixers to build the energy. And then we were going to bake for about 2 hours and then go play laser tag. And then come back at about 11 p.m. to the church and make homemade pizzas because we were already baking and do some more cookie baking and decorating. And then while someone, not sure who, cleaned that up, we were going to watch a movie from 2 to 4 a.m. and then try and sleep from 4 to 8. And then have breakfast and clean up and get ready for worship at 10:15 here. So, and then sell cookies after. So most lock-ins, to my knowledge, don't involve baking. And they usually happen, I think, on a Friday night, so everyone can be miserable at home on Saturday instead of in worship. But this was the brilliance of the plan. It wasn't just a lock-in, right, just to have no sleep and be crazy. It has a purpose, right? This one's one with a purpose. So I think the kids had fun that night. That's kind of a blur. But I do remember some baking with some kids and getting to know some of them. But I really remember two things from that night. I realized in the middle of that night that I really hate lock-ins. And I also realized in the middle of that night that I really don't like fundraising. So now you might be thinking, wait, did she get the memo? This is a summit about stewardship, and she took a youth ministry job, right? And that's what youth ministry is about, right? Doing dumb things and raising money. And maybe teaching kids about Jesus. So I wasn't really sure what to do with those newfound truths that night. And really, to be honest, those first few three-ish years of being in youth ministry. But thankfully, I had enough people telling me to be patient enough and sit with that discomfort while I learned about my context, did a lot of praying, and kept accidentally backing further and further, both into this context of this church and into youth ministry in general. So a few weeks after that lock-in, we kicked off our weekly youth group gatherings. We have a junior high is just 7th and 8th grade in this context, and our high school is 9th through 12th grade. And so I think we had about 6 middle school youth at that first junior high youth group gathering because they're required to be there for confirmation. And then about 2 high school youth, maybe, for senior high, which is a wonderful thing to celebrate. Absolutely. The only catch was our church membership at the time said that there should be about 80 youth in the church. So, like I said, I really believe that every single young person and really every single person that walks into a church should be celebrated and valued and loved for taking the initiative to be there and to come back. But unfortunately, when youth ministry success is counted in terms of numbers of people showing up, this small attendance ratio was not working in my favor. So, unfortunately, also, this low interest, low attendance stayed true for the next few years. And I had those two phenomenal students who showed up each week, who traveled deep into scripture with me and demonstrated lives so clearly impacted by their changed faith in everything that they did, both in school, at home, in the community. It was amazing. And God was so at work in those young people's lives. And I was so blessed to get to walk alongside them. To this day, I actually got to be a part of both of their weddings this past year, which is incredible. So the unfortunate part was that when it came to building that youth program in this church, I struggled to sell a vision or direction when it was those two same faces and stories that were showing up again and again, and no one else really wanted to buy into it. And I understood, why support a program that youth weren't really interested in? So I enrolled in seminary about a year after I started here, and that was largely because I, truth be told, had no formal educational background in Christianity, theology, youth ministry, or really I was a Spanish and English double major in undergrad, which is awesome, and this helps me immensely. But one of the first few things that many of you, I'm sure, have learned in seminary is to unlearn everything that you've learned before. So when you get down in the dirt, and that dust kind of settles, and that discomfort kind of rises, you slowly start to build back up your theology, piecing together how you understand God and the world around you, what your story is, and God, how God has breathed into your life and given you unique gifts to fit into this bigger story, and how you can be at work loving the world around you and breathing that love of God into the world around you. And it started to become clear to me as this theology started to rise that discomfort with lock-ins and other flashy programming and events really was the very root of the reason that I was also uncomfortable with fundraising. So if youth ministry or any program is about creating events for kids to show up, then its success should be measured in how many kids show up, right? But it's also just kind of another thing that people with really busy lives have to juggle and decide whether or not they want to choose to be a part of it. So our youth ministry here took root and started growing when we stopped trying to compete with events and instead started intentionally focusing on creating a safe space to love and be loved. So let's go back to that first lock-in. I mentioned it had been hard to find adult volunteers. A few said they'd come and help bake, and a few others even said, okay, I'll stay up late and drive to laser tag. But what adult wants to give up a night of sleep when you already don't get enough on a regular basis, right? And what busy, growing, active teenager really needs to lose a night of sleep for the sake of running around a church being crazy? Maybe there's a devotion in there somewhere, but they don't remember it. They're too jazzed up and sleep deprived. So we don't do lock-ins here anymore for the sake of staying up all night and being crazy. And I started to work with our youth ministry team to name our vision for what youth ministry could be in this space. And we named it as a safe space for all teens to be accepted and loved. And in doing so, we realized that lock-ins just didn't really help us achieve that vision. And there were a number of other programs that fell into that category. Instead, we started focusing our energy on fleshing out how we could focus on relationship building, both among our teens and adult leaders, across generations in our church congregation, and with various missional organizations, both local and across the globe, so that we weren't just picking something to donate our money to. So we still have overnights together, both on retreats, seasonal retreats during our annual 30-hour famine service project, and on our annual high school summer mission trip to volunteer with the Appalachia Service Project, or ASP. The difference is we go to bed so that we have energy to focus on that intentional time building relationship together, learning to love and be loved and serve and be served. And now when we gather on Sunday nights, we're constantly pulling out extra chairs for the kids who show up. And remember when I said I couldn't find those adults? 25 of them from our church family came and took a full week from their normal lives to serve as adult leaders for our high school mission trip 2-3 weeks ago. And I didn't ask a single one of them to do it. They all volunteered long in advance. This fall, we'll have 20 high school students serving on our student leadership team. And part of their job, I'm actually meeting with them for the first time tomorrow, part of their job is to work to kind of guide the direction of our programming, but their real job is to maintain an environment that feels safe and accepting and to invite their peers into that space. So we do work to name God's role and love in our lives in that space, but our youth ministry exists to love and affirm teenagers right where they're at. 3 weeks ago, while volunteering for the Appalachia Service Project in Southeast Kentucky, our youth and adult mission team sat down for their Friday night closing share circle, which some have come to know as the cry circle. And I listened to teen after teen and adult after adult. In fact, our adults often start this as they share with tears streaming down their faces that their week on ASP was their favorite week of the year, and that their church community is their second family, and they were so grateful to have a space and a group of people where they could just be themselves and be lovingly challenged to become the best possible version of those selves. So not only did they build relationships with and serve alongside families experiencing extreme poverty here in the U.S., and not only were their lives profoundly impacted by what they witnessed and the skills they obtained, but they were taking home friendships that felt so powerful they named them as family. So taking a quick detour here, when you add up my salary and the operating youth ministry budget at our church, I think you get the number that represents what our local church allocates to youth ministry each year. And that number has significantly grown in the past 10 years at this church, which is amazing. But I wanted to note that our annual high school mission trip that I'm talking about, that's not in the budget at all. That's fundraised entirely outside of the budget, and it's actually a number greater than what our youth ministry allocation is each year. You might remember that you heard me say a little while ago that I strongly dislike fundraising. It's true, sort of. I don't really like asking people for what feel like personal favors to me. And I don't really like asking people to give money or time when I feel like they're already really busy and stretched thin. But I can't wait to give young people the space and the platform each year to share their stories of how being a part of this church family has changed their lives and given them a transformed sense of direction for their future. And when those stories are shared, most commonly on the Sunday after we return home from our ASP mission trip, or on the Sunday in March that we call ASP Sunday, which is our largest fundraising event, our church family celebrates the opportunity to financially invest in continuing to create opportunities for lives to be changed. So we raise over $50,000 each year to send our team to partner with this organization doing amazing work in Central Appalachia. And I still come home each year to notes from folks in our congregation who hear stories about the trip and ask if we need more money to make that trip happen. So I know that those numbers are tied to our economic and membership context here. But I do believe there are two things that can be pulled into any context from this story. The first, I think, is when people show up, or that I think that people do show up because other people invite them. And then they stay when they feel accepted. And the second is that people give freely of their time and their resources when they see evidence of changed lives. So they show up when people ask them, they stay when they feel accepted, and they give of their time and resources when they see evidence of changed lives. So my job here in this church still requires creativity and constant programming. Anyone here can tell you that. But instead of spending time and energy focusing on ideas, I try hard to invest in building relationships and leaders. A program that worked really well last year might completely tank this year. And 10 years in, we're actually making some big changes in our youth ministry this fall. But whereas 10 years ago, when I tried program after program after program to entice kids to show up and ask adults to help, now my student leaders either just flat out tell me it's a bad idea before we try it, which happens a lot. They bring me ideas, or we work together to explore the things happening in our context and identify the felt needs of young people in our community so we can continue to work after providing that safe space for them to come together, whether that's here or somewhere else, and a lot of times it's not here, to share and be heard and to love and be loved. Thank you.
So we're going to have a good 10 minutes of questions and answers. So what questions do you have for Hattie?
Starting from scratch, what would